This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Susan Micellas spent more than a decade in Central America photographing life under dictatorships and life during war and revolution. She risked her own life many times to get the picture. Her photographs have been on the covers of news magazines, as well as on the walls of museums. She's considered by many to be the photojournalist who best captured the story of the Sandinista Revolution. Those photographs are collected in her book, Nicaragua. She recently returned to Nicaragua to track down some of the people she photographed during the insurrection against the Somoza regime, to find out how their lives were changed by the Sandinista victory and the long Contra War. It's the subject of her new documentary film, Pictures from a Revolution, co-directed with Richard Rogers and Alfred Guzzetti. Micellas told me why she first went to Nicaragua in 1978.
It's a combination of things. I really read about Nicaragua in the New York Times. It was a place I hadn't heard of. It was a history I knew nothing of. That provoked the first curiosity, and what I was reading about was people challenging a dictatorship and believing that it was an unjust society. Again, the issue of Somoza owning 25% of the country was quite well documented. I think probably what drew me was a sense of people coming together to try and make a change. It wasn't clear at the time, though, of course, in retrospect, it seems so obvious that it would lead to either an armed struggle or a revolution of the scale that took place.
What were some of the lessons that you learned early on about how to photograph under fire, or how to photograph when you knew you could be a target?
I think I probably learned the way most of us did. We learned by watching the others who maybe had been through something similar before, though every war has its own particularities. I remember as the war developed, obviously many journalists came, both television crews as well as other print and photographic journalists. And I remember talking with a TV cameraman who'd covered Vietnam, and he talked about zigzagging down the streets. The people in Vietnam, however, had never been in a war in which it was fought in an urban environment where the rebels and the soldiers would be within blocks of each other. So that would be new for them, that they never crossed the line in the same way. They never went to North and South Vietnam, as you know. But people who had been in Beirut certainly were accustomed to that. In their case, it was more that the sides were never so clear as they were in Central America. So one learns by doing, as always. No one can really tell you how to do it. And whatever you've known or learned from the past is going to be different in the future, because Nicaragua was nothing like what I came to see and live through in El Salvador, which was much more brutal.
Were there a set of rules that you would follow when you were taking photographs during house-to-house fighting or fighting in the streets?
There are no written rules, Terry. There's really a feeling of trusting your own intuition, and if it doesn't feel good, feeling that that's okay not to go forward, and some people do, and some people fall behind, and you have to completely allow yourself to be in touch with your own feelings. I think the most dangerous part of doing this kind of work is assuming that you need to go further than you're emotionally prepared for. Sometimes led by other journalists who may have whatever sets of reasons. Sometimes the scoop mentality, which leads people into very, very dangerous circumstances that they're not able to handle emotionally. I remember very well when a friend of ours was killed in El Salvador, John Hoagland. And John had been in El Salvador for many years and had probably crossed more lines of fire than anyone. And when he was killed, people were just stunned. And yet the next day at 5 a.m, a whole group of men basically got in cars and drove out into the war once again. And I didn't get into the car. And I remember first feeling, What's wrong? I'm a woman. What's wrong with me? I'm not tough enough. And then I guess somewhere I felt I had to live with who I was, whether it was because I was a woman or I simply felt what I felt about John and didn't want to be out there at that time. I think those are very difficult moments because there's so much competition under these circumstances that one can be led for precisely the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm. How long did that feeling last that you didn't want to go out there?
Several days.
It's not really a very long time. Might have felt like it.
It feels like a very long time. But there was another period of time that I didn't go back after and I was in a very nasty mine explosion, which another friend who was driving the car beside me. At this time, I was actually traveling with John. He was in the back seat. I was in the front seat of a car, and a Claymore mine exploded and eventually killed the man that was driving the car. He was in a coma for a long period of time before his death. And it was on a side dirt road, and it was, I guess, sufficiently powerful as a... I think in a way mines are very different than gunfire because they create a kind of paranoia of anywhere, at any time, in an unpredictable fashion, one can be attacked in a sense, which is very different than being on a street, as you can imagine, seeing or hearing the weapons that are on the other side. And that stopped me for a year from going back to El Salvador. I think that whether it's days or a year, it takes a lot of healing or building of barricades internally to do the kind of work and to see what we've seen, to witness the cruelty and that many, many of us have somehow absorbed into our lives.
Do you think that it was harder for you in a way to have these, a short and a long period of not wanting to go back into a dangerous situation? Harder for you because perhaps as a woman you felt more strongly that you had to prove your courage, that you had to prove that, you know, being a woman photojournalist didn't mean that you were going to be any less courageous than your male counterparts.
I'm sure there's an element of that. But I think the hardest thing is that the business is so driven by a competitive edge and there's so little commitment to the particular vision a particular photographer might have in a particular place. But instead, it's a kind of feeling of a business that treats people as if they're replaceable. And of course, on some level, we all are, but in a sense, that if it's only a kind of sense of the automatic response, it's really not very interesting, ultimately, to certainly myself. I am who I am. I grew up when I did, whether I be a woman or, you know, these are factors that obviously are at play, but I think the most difficult thing is really to be in a world which doesn't value the vision of a particular person as much as one would hope.
If you're just joining us, my guest is photojournalist Susan Micellis, and she spent over a decade in Central America documenting life under war, revolution, dictatorship. There are several books of her work. She's had many museum shows. Her work's been on the cover of the news magazines. And now she has a new movie about her return to Nicaragua 10 years after the insurrection, and that's called Pictures from a Revolution. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is photojournalist Susan Micellis. Can you tell us the story of a picture that you took a great risk to get because you thought the image would be an important one?
I mean, there's so many pictures that come from taking different levels of risks. There's a picture that's actually referred to in the film, but just by another image of the yellow bus and a group of people holding up their arms in front of the yellow bus. And if you see the photograph, perhaps even out of the context of the book, I'm not sure what meaning it has. But everybody being pulled off of a bus is a very common event, probably throughout Latin America and different countries more than others, but certainly Nicaragua, El Salvador, Colombia, in areas of conflict, everyone is potentially the enemy. And so the army ritually searches buses or cars looking for messages or people carrying medicine or any evidence that they might be armed or supporting the people who are armed in a region. So that group of people at that time in Nicaragua were pulled off of a bus, and a man with a pistol is just behind me searching, watching the search. And I was in a car. He didn't pull me out of my car. He looked through the car. And as he turned and all of the people were asked to turn their backs to they're facing the bus, I took a photograph. And that second, I had as much doubt as I might have had in any number of other moments as to whether or not he would approve, he would accept, in fact, the fact that that click would make an image that would be remembered in some fashion. I didn't know if he was going to shoot people right then and there off the bus. In El Salvador, I saw that happen. I know that that has happened at times that none of us have seen.
What happened after you clicked the camera when people were taken off the bus?
I don't think he noticed.
You don't think he heard the click?
I don't think he heard the click. I don't know what he might have done. He was certainly in close enough range to have heard the click. I think not hearing the click may be more a factor of his own obsession with the people that had just been taken off the bus. He was sufficiently engaged in that activity that what I was doing was secondary, or he may not have thought what I was doing mattered. Certainly in El Salvador, we saw much evidence of that. The book, El Salvador, Work of 30 Photographers, there are many images that are shocking just because they were made, that you have to ask, how is it possible that the men in this photograph allowed the photographer to make this image at that time? There's an acknowledgement in a strange way that it's as if they're, you know, holding up the deers they've shot in the woods, you know, proudly when they're showing mutilated bodies below them. It's something that I've never really been able to understand. Either they don't see that the photograph has power as it travels out from their culture, or they feel that they're sufficiently protected, which in fact we've seen in that the military that have caused tremendous atrocities in Argentina and Chile and El Salvador, and the list is endless, have not in fact been tried or executed in the same fashion. So this is it's a strange thing about both, on one end, the photographer feeling the necessity to make the image, the person in the image in a strange way collaborating by the fact that they don't prevent the image from being made. Though they're not giving permission per se, they certainly could make it impossible at times. And we also know of places that have been wise enough, such as to prevent the images because they believe in the power of them, whether it be Israel or South Africa, where it is absolutely forbidden to make such documents.
Do you have photographs that took on lives of their own in the countries that you shot them, and took on lives very different than the ones you had envisioned?
The film documents an image that has had an extensive life of its own, and I think a surprising one, the man throwing the Molotov in the town of Esteli at the last day before Somoza left the country during the insurrection. I mean, it's an image that's very heroic. Been stenciled on the walls in Nicaragua. It's been seen on the covers and inside pages of many magazines internationally. And it was also a symbol that was Xeroxed and used by the Contras to raise funds against the Sandinistas, accusing them of communist aggression. I think anyone who makes an image has learned, perhaps painfully, that it can be Xeroxed and is never owned again. The image exists, and I find parts and parts of images in paintings and other people's pictures, and we're about to enter an age of digitization in which it'll be that much easier to borrow a few pixels out of my picture and integrate it in someone else's picture. And what the original moment meant may be nothing in relation to how it in the future will be used.
You were in your early 30s when you first went to Central America, right?
I actually turned 30 in Nicaragua.
Okay.
In my first trip.
And now you're in your early 40s?
I'm in my early 40s.
Has your attitude toward risking your life for your work changed as you've gotten older?
I guess in some ways, but in some ways it's still the same. I mean, I'm here, it's 10 days before, whatever, Christmas, a little longer. I'm faced with a decision in the next 2 days as to whether or not I'm going to join a team of people who are going into an area which is going to be difficult. And it means giving up Christmas with my family and my friends, and it's an impossible decision. Not just because there's risk, but because if I make a decision that rather than be with them at Christmas, I will travel to a difficult area, they are less important than my work. The possibility of their anxiety that I inevitably create will cause them pain. My family's been fantastic, and as has been the man that I've lived with for a long time now. But it is not an easy thing to ask of anyone.
What is the place that you're thinking of going to?
I think it's, I prefer not to say, considering the conditions of the place I'm going.
You think it might put you at risk to mention?
Yeah, I do. I don't know. I think we can never know that.
So how are you going to decide whether or not to go?
I don't know, Terry. I don't know. I'm just going to be with myself for the next couple of days and see when I pull out the suitcase if it feels right to be packing it.
Right. When you went back to Nicaragua for your movie, you found that a lot of people felt, well, cheated by the revolution in a way. It is true that they no longer lived under threat of being killed by the National Guard, by Somoza's National Guard. On the other hand, materialistically, their lives hadn't really changed for the better. They were still poor, no food, or very little food, very little work, difficult to feed their children, shabby housing. When you look at what people told you and how disappointed they were and how so many of them had given up hope, do you blame that on the revolution? Do you think that the Sandinista leadership was unable to deliver? Or do you think it had more to do with the Contra War and with the difficulty of changing society for the better in Nicaragua while under attack by the Contras?
Terry, this is to begin. I think that there's no question that the Sandinistas tried, and there's also no question that the war caused tremendous damage. You have to see that if a school's built and it's burned down, and if a clinic is built and it's burned down, there are only limited resources that one can work with. The people expected that they would no longer live on dirt floors, perhaps. But the fact that a sidewalk would be built along their road or the road itself would be paved wasn't enough. Nothing can be enough. I think the thing that's so difficult about change in the Third World, and Nicaragua is an example, is that what overthrowing the dictatorship may have taken a relatively short time compared, let's say, to what has been a war in El Salvador. The fact, though, is the reconstruction of a country, the resources that are needed to really transform it fundamentally to affect as many lives as it needs to, is incredibly difficult. I don't have any doubt that people will continue to fight for reforms, for in effect they've been fundamentally changed by what they did even 10 years ago. No one in the film, for example, denied and regretted per se that they had fought against Somoza. I think, are disappointed that their lives haven't been benefited materially. But again, I want to say one thing that you glided over, and it's perhaps the film doesn't make it sufficiently evident, but when Dionisio says the fact that the National Guard is no longer there and he's no longer terrified and that he can live at peace, we say that easily because we never lived with something fundamentally different than that, or we haven't yet lived in what is a state of tremendous repression. That is, it's not a small thing.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to say that it was.
Yeah, I mean, it is an enormously significant thing. But that's not to say that there isn't tremendous disappointment that, as was said in the film again, that in some way their lives weren't better.
Well, Susan Micellis, I want to thank you so much for talking with us, and I wish you the best.
Yeah, thanks, Terry.
Susan Micellis' new documentary film about Nicaragua is called Pictures from a Revolution. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.